8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, police backs down on the ban on public demonstrations. What has necessitated this turnaround? We will find out shortly. Cutting down the housing deficit. Government gets serious with affordable housing project to solve the housing crisis in the country. And speaking English the broken way. Is it becoming a national crisis among Ghanaian youth? What is its effect on written English exams? Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the discussions by text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. Behind the News is also live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Obonu FM 96.5 in Teman, Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast. Our text line again is 0266-677570. 0266-677570. Behind the News is also live on Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi and Radio BAR 93.5 in Sunyang. Having stopped several demonstrations citing the volatile situation in the country and taking advantage of the Public Order Act, the police now say they are ready to provide security for public demonstrations. The service has recently been on a collision course with the Progressive People's Party and some pressure groups over their intention to embark on demonstrations. They also cited the difficulty in providing officers for other operations because the Supreme Court election petition tied their hands. So what has changed now? Could it be the court case against the service by the PPP? DSP Safas Asa is the Acting Director of Public Affairs Ghana Police Service and is joining us on the line. Good evening, DSP, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, thank you.
Well, you've had a hard time granting the request of PPP and others to provide security at their demonstrations after they have notified you of their intentions. What were the reasons?
Thank you, and let me correct one thing. I am not acting. I'm the substantive public relations director.
All right, thanks for the correction.
Yeah, as we have indicated over the past few months, we had our strength overstretched as a result of the security provisions that we put in place for the court case. And as you may be aware, we came out to entreat members of the public not to, or those who have desire to embark on demonstrations and perhaps hold other special events, to shelve them whilst we turn our attention to the crucial issues of the court case and secure it before perhaps turning our attention to other issues. And we ask for this because the Public Order Act specifically enjoins the police to provide protection for demonstrations. And we're in a position not to be able to discharge that responsibility. So we needed to let the public know about our status and also entreat them to shelve their desire to hold the special events for the period which they agreed upon. And just after the court case, everybody would have thought that one might think that everything is okay, but in terms of security, you don't just step down or knock down just after an event like that, because we were looking at security arrangements before, during, and after, and we had succeeded in clearing the first two. So we were in the last phase where we needed to manage the post verdict issues, and that was when PPP also decided to embark on their demonstrations. So we met with them and discussed the best way of going about it. We asked them to postpone it they wouldn't listen. And the police resorted to the most legal means available to us, that was to go to court to seek injunction to restrain them. And that is exactly what we did. So we restrained them because we were overstretched. We were not ready. Our personnel had been deployed to all over the country to provide security. They hadn't been withdrawn. And it was going to be difficult for us to manage the demonstration because in demonstration, you don't just underrate any demonstration. That is why we begged them to suspend it, and they didn't agree.
Well, DSP, this ban, was it from the police service or the national security? Because I've heard people say the ban came from national security.
We don't even want to talk about a matter of ban. It is not a ban. It was an entreatment from the Ghana Police Service. Entreatment from Ghana Police Service. Entreating members of the public, desirous of holding special events, to suspend it. So, it wasn't, I don't know where comes the word national security and other things, but I remember just on the eve or just upon the commencement of the court case, the police administration coming out with a release calling on members of the public to cooperate with the police and not embark on any special event within the period. So I don't know about any national security issue coming here.
But talking about entreatment, how different is it from ban?
Oh, there are two different words, at least, even if you should take them on the surface of the words. It also meant that we were also going to go strictly according to the Public Order Act. We were asking that our hands were full, so we're not going to be in a position to provide security as we are enjoined by law. And that it also meant that if anybody wanted to do it, because we're overstretched, we're going to go to court to seek injunction. And if the court, would see any reason with us, then they will also grant our request. And if by so doing, you say it is a ban, fine, but it's not a ban. A ban is somebody having the authority to say, stop doing this and ensuring that you don't have any option. Members of the public had the option of defying, which, gracefully, they didn't do. The option of defying, which they didn't do, but they had that option. And we also had the option of going to court, like the recent case where CPP decided to defy it and went to court, and they were restrained. So there's a difference between a ban and an entreatment.
Well, you quoted a Public Order Act 491. What exactly does it say?
It says a lot that I don't think time will allow us to. But I will just...
At least we need a little bit of public education on
it. Anybody desirous, any bare person or group of person desirous of embarking on any special event must notify the police at least 5 days before the event. And in the letter of the notification, they should indicate a place of congregation where they are meeting, routes they are using, time they are meeting, their destination, and when they are closing. And that the law also holds them accountable for anything that will happen on that day. If for any reason the police think that they are not in a position to support them to embark on the demonstration, the police will let them know and write to them. And if they also don't, within 2 days, 48 hours, the police doesn't have get any response from them as to whether they were going to heed the advice of the police or not, then the police has the option of going to court to restrain them. And this is about the gist of the whole thing. And the police are enjoined to provide security and ensure that it does not breach the law. We do this to ensure that the demonstration does not interrupt or cut or interfere with the provision of certain essential services. It doesn't pose any defense problem to the nation and a whole lot of issues. And at any time that the police don't get the support of the demonstrators, we're to go to court.
Well, DSC, others are also saying you backtrack because of PPP's suit against you at the Human Rights Court.
Never, never at all. We didn't have anything to cause us to backtrack at all. They wanted to go to hold a special event, a demonstration. We were not prepared for it, and we followed the law and went to court. We went to court and court restrained them. We didn't do anything untoward. We didn't do anything illegal for us to backtrack. The court upheld our request and restrained them. All along, I must say, in security terms, you don't always put everything in public. All along, we were calling our personnel bit by bit, batch by batch. But we were not, enabled enough to protect them. And so we couldn't say, we are almost through, so you just wait. We said that they should give us a little time and the police will be able to. So we are now able to provide protection for such distance. And we haven't even been served any notice as the last time I found out from my regional commander. And so we don't have anything to fear. If for only one issue, so we should withdraw, or we should withdraw all the distance. We could also sit with them and try to get a lot of, mobilize personnel from other sources to ensure that they do it. But that is not the crux. The crux is that we are unable. So it's not because they go to court. They have gone to court.
All right, DSA, I'll indulge you to stay on the line for me. I'll come back to you. There are some questions I would like to answer for them. But then, William Dolpo is executive member of the PPP. He's joined the conversation. Good evening, Mr. Dolpo, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you very much for having me.
What was your initial reaction to the police decision to readily provide security for public demonstrations now?
Well, first of all, it is a welcome news for us that the police have put this new information in the public domain for those who wish to exercise their constitutional rights to inform them as required by the Public Order Act, and they indicating their willingness to, support. But let me say that I am absolutely disappointed in the Police Director of Public Relations and his regional Public Relations Officer. This is the first time I am listening to a detailed account presented by either of them, and I am so, so disappointed. Now, my sister, I have a letter in my hand. The official response from the regional command to our request for police protection, fortunately, they wrote this letter in bulleted points. And the only one which answered our request was number 2, which said, I'd like to read. It says, "We are unable to provide you with the needed police protection due to the ban on all public demonstration by the National Security earlier this year, which is still in force." This is the written response. And we do not deal with, verbal, communication when you are dealing with such serious matters. So for the police director of PR this evening to give all these long accounts and say he does not know where the ban is coming from, this is official document on which we stood on to go to the, Human Rights Court to, seek clarification. How come national security is able to place a blanket ban on citizens' right to go on demonstration when there is no national security threat in this country? I am most, most disappointed. Okay? So please, police, public affairs will need to work with their regional command and national command. There is a clear misrepresentation in all the account that has been given. I thought that we had had a very happy ending to this, except that we still insisted that, look, the Human Rights Court needed to pronounce on this national security ban so that it will serve as a guide to all of us, including the police in the future. But listen, I've been listening for the past 10 minutes and all the accounts. I am shocked at it.
Well, now...
I am shocked.
You have decided to go to court following the police decision not to provide security for your intended demonstration. What happens next now that the police have expressed their readiness to provide security for such a public as? Does it mean that you will withdraw your suit?
Well, this morning, again, the police regional command invited us to discuss the way forward. We were there. We have a very fruitful discussion. Unfortunately, the police PR were not there. For them to be, party to this discussion, to know what exactly transpired. The same thing happened when we had a series of meetings with them before they gave us an official letter. Please, some of us don't wish to be engaging, public officers in this kind of banter on the airwaves, okay? So police PR must stay in touch with police administration and check communication that they give to citizens. All right? So we are saying that, yes, that is just one leg of the issue. The other leg is that we need clarification whether national security has the locus or the right to ban, demonstrations in this country when there's no national security threat. So as for that court suit, it has to remain there for the court to determine. It will serve as, guiding principle for all of us in the future. We are happy that the police has decided to come along and cooperate with us. We have gone back to the drawing table. We need to engage all our coalition partners and our rank and file again, and thereafter we are going to communicate to the police a new date. If we choose them, we are going to go ahead and have our demonstration. But I think that a gap has been developed, and the police PR needs to sit up, because all that they've been telling you is not written anywhere in the official correspondence that we had, and I'm disappointed in that.
All right, Mr. Adolpo, I'll ask you to hold the line. Let me go back to DSC for his response to all that you've said. DSC, you heard Mr. Adolpo. He seems not to agree with the explanations that you gave.
I am equally surprised. I am speaking from police headquarters, and I don't think that from the time the police came out with the entreatment, calling Ghanaians to shelve their desires to hold special events, there was any letter issued stating that police were banning. I'm speaking from the official source of the Ghana Police Service. And I don't think that national security either has come out with any letter or any directive saying that we have banned demonstrations. So I don't know where he's talking from. Perhaps he's dealing with the regional level. It's very unfortunate that situation. But it doesn't mean that the Public Relations Department of the Ghana Police Service is not in touch with the headquarters. I am speaking from the letter that we issued right on the day that we issued it before the commencement of the court case, which was signed by Rosio Atinga. That is it. So I don't have any problem with it. If they want to go ahead and cite any national security like banning demonstration, they can go ahead and do it. They are saying that we are now more enabled. We are now in a position to provide security. And so, no, they have that right to go ahead, but it's not to kind of slight anybody.
Well, but then I would like to know whether the police have also met with the PPP and the others after you've changed your decision to now provide security for public demonstrations.
You see, before anybody embarks on a demonstration, the law says that you have to notify the police at least 5 clear days, and you must notify an ASP or the head of the police station closest to where you intend to hold the demonstration. So, as I speak, the PPP have not been dealing with the National Police Headquarters, but they are dealing with the closest police command head to them. So they've been dealing with the regional command. You understand it? So we're dealing with the regional command. So I came out as the head of the public affairs director of the Ghana Police Service to carry out administrative directive. And that is what I did at the onset, where a letter was signed by the Director General of Administration and treating the public to share such ambitions. Now we are enabled, they once again give me the directive to tell them that we are now enabled. So persons desirous of embarking on demonstration can, commence the processes. So I don't see why anybody would want to put anybody on the carpet and start lambasting.
Well, in effect, you are now telling any group or persons that want to demonstrate that they have the chance to do that now. Is that not so?
To begin the process, because there is still a process. It's not a blanket statement that starts demonstrating. There is a Public Order Act, and it must be followed.
All right, DSC, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
I'm glad.
DSC Cephas Atta is a Director of Public Affairs, Ghana Police Service. And coming back to you, Mr. Dopo, how can we prevent circumstances like what has just gone by so that accusations and counter-accusations cease?
Well, I think that the police administration will have to be up and doing. At the tail end, I heard DSP Cephas Atta talk about speaking from police headquarters, when this is actually a regional issue that I am now convinced he knows nothing about, because I'm still holding this letter from the regional command in my hand, and that is the only official response that we had from the Ghana Police Service, regional command, dated to, on the 6th of September 2013, and that was the really, only reason given for their inability to, come along with us. So clearly, there is a huge gap when it comes to communication within the police service itself. Otherwise, we would not spend time arguing over this. And like I said, the regional command invited us this morning. Party leaders, we were all there. We had a very fruitful discussion. In fact, according to them, if we wanted to go on demonstration tomorrow, they were ready to go with us. So now, back to your question, as regards the matter before the court. In fact, but for this correspondence, we said that it was the national security ban that was still in force, which made it impossible for them to work with us. We were not going to go to court. But now we have put this matter before the court, and we need clarification so that it would serve as direction to all of us. So the one leg of the matter is resolved. When we fix a new date, we are going to go back to the police and have our demonstration. However, we think that it is important for this matter to be addressed, whether it lies within the powers of the national security to put a blanket a ban on demonstrations when there is no national security situation on hand.
I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. William Dawapo is executive member of the PPP. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Behind the News is also live on Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi. Let's read some of your text messages. And Big Bright from KNUST says, very good directive from the police, but they should warn their personnel from turning the uniform into abusikeleke attire, especially the police ladies. And Emmanuel Sewe in Boga says, yes, it is the right of any Ghanaian to embark on demonstration, but the security of the nation is paramount. Why is the PPP so much insistent to hit the streets even after police explanations? I think the party wants to get cheap popularity. Allow the government to focus. And Samson Awunyo in Shahill says, Ghanaians are in the hands of the police in terms of security. PPP should not misunderstood the way the police do its things. And Opoku Akowia in Bwa says, the Ghana Police Service should give us a break. Their motto is no more service with integrity, but service with prosperity. People used to respect them in the olden days, but not now. They need a complete reform in the service. Many thanks for your text messages. Ghanaian workers will soon be heaving a big sigh on the accommodation problems because government has resolved to hand over the affordable housing project started under the NPP administration to the Social Security and Insurance Trust NIT to complete. The Minister of Works and Housing, Alhaji Collins Dada, put out the information after inspecting the site for a 5,000 housing unit at Pampram to be undertaken by a Brazilian company beginning next month. He said the decision of government to hand over the project to SNIT is because government is unable to secure the needed funds to complete the project. So, as this latest move to solve accommodation problems, a positive one. Abraham Otabolo is a public relations officer at the ministry. Good evening, Abraham, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, my sister. And how is your program doing, and how are you?
Very well, Abraham. Well, what informed this decision?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity once more. It will be recalled that the Ministry of Water Resources, with a policy and policy direction to all infrastructure activities in the country, and for some time now, we have been confronted with this housing challenge, which currently stands at about 1.7 million in excess. So government over the years have been finding a solution to this housing canker. But thankfully, luck has been on our side finally. And the minister, sector minister, have been working tirelessly, have gotten SNIT to accept to support government to provide the needed shelter for the people. Shelter, you and I know that is one of the most single important thing in human life, apart from water and air and the others. You can think of shelter. And the Ministry of Water Resources is responsible for, if nothing at all, two major of such, that is water and housing. And so the minister, throughout the year when he came to the office, tried to work very hard to get the accommodation problem solved. And the team at the ministry have been also been working very supportive or very hard to support the minister in that direction. So in that regard, the policy of the ministry was to use the public-private partnership as a means of leveraging the public resources with private sector and then expertise to help in resolving the housing deficit. So the minister engaged SNIT together with his technical men, and finally SNIT has agreed to also support the ministry, for that matter government, in that direction. But it will be recalled that this whole affordable housing project, which was started during the previous administration, was the baby of the ministry. And so there are no serious differentials. It's still a continuity. Initial capital was emanated from SMIT, which ran out, and later we had to get the HIPIC fund to also continue. That also ran out, and we still do not have the needed funds to complete the huge infrastructure project that has been dotted across the country. If I recall, about six regions of the country. You can think of Asokorimampo in Kumasi. You can think of the WAR site. You can think of Kofodria. You can think of Tamale and all other places. In Accra here, we have about two sites. And that project, the minister has resolved to assist government to get the needed funds to complete this project. So SNIT have shown a good site to support the government, for the matter, the ministry, to complete those projects. SNIT, you and I will know that SNIT is no joke. SNIT have the needed facilities to support the government in that respect.
Are you saying that SNIT has the capacity to complete these projects? Because we know that their finances, as it stands now, is a bit overstretched.
Yes. I can tell you on the point that SNIT have the facility or the capacity to support government or the ministry to deliver the houses. In any case, the houses have gotten to some level or some stage, and what is needed is not too of a match to complete. But of course, MIT alone cannot do it. The government itself have made some budgetary allocation in that respect. So they'll be working hand in hand to complete those projects.
So 5,000 housing units to be constructed at Pampram next month. Is that correct?
Pampram is not the site. It's the project is at Saklimi. Saklimi is under the Ningo Pampram district, the newly created Ningo Pampram district. And that is beyond Pampram. But the 5,000 housing project will definitely take off next month when the president, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, will cast out to commence the project. Today, as I speak, we were trying to run a documentary on some project of our ministry. So myself and some team were on the site, and we saw it ourselves. Yesterday, the minister also took time to visit the site, and we saw that there's a lot of preparatory work all going there to kickstart the project. The project will not only be dotted at Saklimi in the Ningo Pampram district. It will cut across the country to travel to other regions or other districts. But for the start, we'll start with 5,000 and beyond in the Greater Accra region.
Well, these are affordable housing to be completed by SNIT. Why not the State Housing Company?
Yeah, thank you very much. State Housing Company, somewhere last year, where I located some blocks at Bortiman, and as I speak to you, they are almost through with their portion of their allocation. And we think that it was the policy of the ministry that coming at the back of the SCS project, where we seem to give all the housing of the component to one company. This time we want to break it down. We want to give it to individual companies who have the capacity and the zeal to do the work. So we cannot concentrate all the over 1.7 million in excess housing deficit to one entity to work on. That, I think, is the new direction for the ministry. So we think that, yes, State Housing, you can tackle. State Housing, for all you know, it's an agency under the ministry. And so we have given the Botima side some blocks to State Housing, which they are almost through with their work. And we are trying to also get other companies like 30 Realities, which is also contracting about 500 housing units around the Pong area, Pong Tema area. And then currently, the 5,000 housing units being undertaken by OAS of Brazil. And among other companies, you can think of the ITAL Construct. Recently, we also gave some to Agro Resources Limited. And so it is clear that this time we want to break it down. We want quality in the housing environment. We want to make sure that there's a level of sanity in the way we provide houses for our people. We don't want any situation whereby one company will be given everything to execute. And at the end of the day, if that does not happen, our hands are tied. No, that shouldn't be it. So the new policy of the ministry is that let us give it to various individuals. Because on a daily basis, we receive hundreds of proposals of various companies who have the zeal and the capacity to deliver the houses. And I think that this is the way we want to go with.
Well, this initiative by government, is it not too late? Because we could have done that earlier, not now.
Yeah, thank you very much, my sister. But let us go by the old adage that it is better late than never. Housing is key. And you and I, as we speak, after our talk, we all have to go and find a place and lay our heads. So, my dear, let us think of today and tomorrow. Let's forget about the past. Let us provide housing for our people. That is what the people of Ghana need. And inshallah, we'll work hard and get it for them.
So how soon will these 5,000 units at Pampram going to be ready?
Yes, yeah, it's in phases. At each stage, we are providing 500. So within the next 1 year or so, we should see 500 completed. And then as it proceeds, 2,000 and over. So within the 4 or 5 years time, we should get the 5,000 housing ready for habitation.
And who or what category of people will benefit from it?
Yeah, you know the policy of the ministry. The policy of the ministry is to provide housing for middle to lower income earners or brackets. We did not think that, the elite in society or the very top brass should be able. We need to get, well, that is where the challenge is. The challenge is at the low to middle income earners. So that is the target. And so when the OAS and all others come, we try to provide some incentive package in order to minimize the cost of construction. And for instance, we give them 5-year tax holiday. We also make sure that as part of our activities, we have what we call land banks, where we try to give land to prospective investors or let's say developers to cushion them so that they can also cushion the people of Ghana or what we call the middle to lower income earners. So that at the end of the day, if I were to get a house or a facility at one of the real estate companies, it wouldn't be the same as that of what the Ministry of Federal Matters Government has provided. Our interest is to provide social housing for the people. That is what the people of Ghana need.
Abraham, many thanks for your time with us tonight. Abraham Otabel is a public relations officer at the Ministry of Works and Housing. And Hackman Owusu Ajiman was the Minister of Works and Housing under the Kufuor administration, and he's joining us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Owusu Ajiman. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam. How are you?
I'm very well. Well, you have been in the saddle as the Works and Housing Ministry before. The current government has now decided to give the affordable housing project you started to SNIT to complete. Is it a positive move to get accommodation for Ghanaian workers?
I think we should try and get everything in the right perspective. Basically, this whole project was started. Yes, I was the minister who started it, who initiated it. It was meant to demonstrate to Ghanaian contractors, all and sundry, that we could produce quality housing at affordable rates for the citizenry of this country. Indeed, at that time, we had calculated that we will require about $16,000 for a two-bedroom flat because the land basically was owned by government and we had these land banks which we were drawing upon. And it was supposed to be distributed nationwide, hence the initiatives in most of the regions of the country. So basically that's what it was. It was not given to a particular company, but a series of ordinary Ghanaian contractors whom we had hoped then to build up their capacity and their competence in the construction of these four-story premises. As it turned out to be, it was so well done, so well organized, that as I speak to you now, of the 5,000 or so units that is being spoken of, not a single one of the four-story buildings has collapsed. Not a single one. This is a record in this country because it was properly done. And that was supposed to impart to the ordinary Ghanaian contractor the know-how of doing this thing and under strict supervision. Having said that, let me also hasten to add that each and every contractor had one block to build. And some of these people invested funds in it to be collected subsequently through certificates from the ministry. As it turned out to be, when we left government, the whole project was abandoned, which is most unfortunate. Now, these people now must be paid back their money. That is the fairest thing to do. Whoever it was, and they were not only, it was non-partisan. They haven't said that. Given this initiative now to SNIT,
yes,
in other administrations and other jurisdictions, the pension fund is always a good source of funding for infrastructure development, especially for housing for workers, because they contribute the bulk of these things. But I believe that unless one sees the details of how this is going to be done, then one is not able to make an informed judgment on the way to go as far as this is concerned. Let me also say that if SNIT can revisit the concept, if the Ministry of Water Resources, Works and Housing can revisit the concept of this affordable housing, then they would be able to demonstrate to the nation that indeed affordable housing can be is achievable. Given the the level of housing deficit in this country, anything short of making sure that you bring the housing prices down will not be cannot be afforded by the ordinary citizen, by the ordinary worker who is contributing to this. So if SNIT, madam, is going to revisit it and not make it a profit venture whereby they're going to now cost it at the same price as the ordinary developer, then it's good thing. But if they renege on that one, then I would think that the whole idea, the whole philosophy behind this affordable housing would have been defeated.
But could state housing have done the job instead of SNIT?
Well, government is a bad manager, basically. That's my philosophy, and I don't think anybody can fault that. Housing Corporation has been there from time immemorial. My first house in 1973 was bought for them in Dansuman. And since then, it's been going down and down and down. We do not want to use good money to chase after bad money. And so, therefore, we made it in such a way that individual Ghanaian entrepreneurs would undertake this. So, to a very large extent, in as much as Housing Corporation had not shown, company had not shown itself capable of delivering the goods, then it was about time we looked at other alternatives. And the only alternative was to empower the ordinary Ghanaian contractor so he can do these things. So yes, we could have given some to them. Indeed, we did say that eventually they can take some on the same conditions as we are given to the individual contractors, whom unfortunately this government has not paid. And that's the point I want to make here. Let them pay them. And if housing company can do it at about the same price, why not give it to them? Because we have, if we get 1 million units, it will not even be enough. So let us move in the right direction. This five-year suspension of activity, for me, is quite bothersome, worrisome, and I don't think it should have happened at all.
I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Hackman Owusu Ajiman was the Minister of Works and Housing under the Kufuor administration. It's behind the news. Let's read some of your text messages. And Akoto Razak says, the ban lifted for public demonstration will give some citizens chance to disturb the peace we are enjoying. And Antonio says, demonstration does not win power. It is your competency, charisma, and above all, your destiny. Interesting one from Antonio. And Asimu Perez from Wah West says, hello, what a wonderful performance this night. In fact, I'm always happy about this Behind the News program. May the Almighty Allah richly bless Radio Ghana and all the workers of GBC. And AU Farouk in Tamale says the PPP should know we are not in the campaign season, whether demonstration or not. Their mischievous plans will never work. Abraham in Dansuman says when the teachers College of Education would when would the Teachers College of Education release the admission list? And Monica Coins in Navungo says, we thank God the president's nominee for MCE in Navungo had a one-touch victory. We feel others should follow suit. David from Nkoka wants to know why the delay in forces recruitment this year. And we members of Sankofa Base of Tumu are appealing to the Minister of Health and the Austrian government to build some of the polyclinics in the Sisala East area. We are lacking health facilities. By Napoleon from Tumu Sankofa Base. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. And we are sorry if we don't read your text because we have lots and lots to read and we don't have enough time, so our listeners should bear with us. And moving on to our next story. It has become a no-holds-barred situation in the kind of expression and language used by the youth. Pidgin English is so pervasive that you hardly hear a line of proper grammar between two chatting young men without it. Expressions like adegocho would give a clear picture of the situation at hand. The situation has become so grave that it is said to be the cause for poor performance of students in written English language examinations. So why this addiction and how devastating is it to the quality of written or spoken English? We hit the phone lines and speak to Dr. Mauli Ejei, Senior Lecturer at the Department of English, University of Ghana. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, Doc, how do you feel when you hear Pidgin English spoken?
Well, first of all, let me disabuse people's minds about the status of Pidgin as a form of expression or as a form of communication. I don't have any negative reaction to Pidgin English, whether it is spoken by students or non-literate people of any age group or whatsoever. I just take it in my stride. I don't have any negative feelings towards it.
But then why has it become an endorsed spoken language of our youth?
Well, first of all, you must know how Pidgins and Creoles have developed across the entire world. It is some kind of lingua franca force categories of people, and it's used in certain contexts. I don't think it is peculiar to Ghana. Pidgins are spoken all over the world, especially in West Africa, in Sierra Leone, for instance, in Nigeria, it has become, a national language of a sort. But the correlation between Pidgin and competence in the use of English is a debatable one because, for instance, I have noted in my practice as a teacher that the best English students also speak Pidgin. Do you understand me? But it doesn't mean that when people speak Pidgin, then they transfer that into some formal, context. Pidgin is conversational. It is not formal. So I don't really see how it impinges on students' performance. There's no scientific basis to say so. The only thing I can say is that those who allow Pidgin to influence them, if it does influence them anyway, in academic contexts, happen to be people who already are incompetent in the use of English language. Now, let me tell you, we have a young lecturer in our department now who actually is both his undergraduate long essay and Enfield thesis on Pidgin among students. He, in his time, was the best graduating English student in our department. You cannot say that he never spoke Pidgin. He spoke Pidgin and he still speaks Pidgin. But then he's one of the best English users we have in our department. So it's a very, very debatable contest. I just think that other things are contributing to, it's a composite kind of thing. You cannot just single out Pidgin. Other things are contributing to the poor performance in English. But to single out the use of Pidgin is to deny the existence of other influences.
But can we attribute it to difficulty in speaking quality English?
The point I'm making is that it is a switch. For instance, if I want to dress my garden boy and I know his level of education, I will switch quickly to Pidgin. But seconds after, when I meet a fellow professor, I will not speak Pidgin to him. I will speak normal English with him. So there are contexts in which we use Pidgin. And I'm saying that it is not necessarily true that it influences competence and use of language. Yes, I have marked examination scripts where there is some level of slippage of Pidgin into examination answers. I remember very well, I was marking a literature script, and the question was about things fall apart. And I remember this very, very well. The student in the course of writing, wrote something like, in warfare society, Okonkwo then think They are, you know, I can't, you know, for Okonkwo dance in examination, you know, circumstances. So yes, it will slip into proper English usage, but that is few and far between, because even today, text messaging, you know, the youth have developed a new orthography, the way they spell, the way they, you know, write things. And yes, you will be reading examination scripts and you find shorthand, students using shorthand. So yes, there's a level, you know, at which this negatively affects students, because it is a mental process. It's a psychological process, because under pressure, it is difficult for students sometimes to draw the line, and inadvertently they allow pidgin or you know, shorthand to seep into their writings. Yes, it will influence the use of English, but to you know, a very small extent, because students know where to draw the line.
All right, Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Mauli Ejay, Senior Lecturer at the Department of English, University of Ghana. And Professor Kwesi Yanka is an expert in linguistics and former Pro Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana. He's now the President of Central University College. Good evening, Prof, and welcome to the program.
Good evening. The line is not clear, but I'll try my best.
All right. Prof, there have been public concerns over the standard of English being spoken and written by the youth. Is broken or pidgin English a contributory factor?
Well, I'm sure if it is a factor, it's one of the several. It's not one of the several factors. One would expect, you know, particularly when it comes to written English, one would normally not expect much of pidgin English, so far as most of the pidgin that we know of in West Africa is more spoken than written. People rather speak pidgin English, that's mostly among students. When it comes to the written form, there are not many instances of written pidgin, except probably insofar as opportunities exist for informal uses of language, as in text messaging and so on and so forth. But I would say that it's maybe one out of several factors. I wouldn't say it's a major factor. There's a general problem with English within the country as a whole, both spoken and written English among students. Pidgin, yes, maybe a factor, but I don't think it's a major one.
But what is the difference between pidgin English and broken English?
Well, pidgin is more systematic. It is a local variety of English, where it's a kind of language where you would rather use the vocabulary of the target language. The vocabulary is largely that of English, and the grammar, a very simplified grammar, a very, very simple, not complex grammar, more often based on the other language, the local variety. And it's much more systematic. Yes, you can talk of broken English with much less systematic grammar in terms of the broken English, much more random. But it is the pidgin English that is more established, particularly in West Africa. Mm. And you may have various varieties of pidgin English along the West African coast, depending on which country.
And, Prof, why is this type of English, be it broken or pidgin, taking over the formal and standard English, especially among the youth?
The vocabulary is simpler, the grammar is much simpler. It cannot be used in all formal, on all occasions. It is just restricted to certain situations, social situations only. But it is much used, it's much better preferred among the English people. It's more informal. And when people are relating among peer groups, they would rather use pidgin English, because of the situation, the informality of the situation. it encourages a kind of shortened mode of expressing yourself rather than using the drum.
Well, Prof, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Professor Kwesi Iyanka is an expert in linguistics and former Vice Chancellor of the University of Ghana, and he is now President of Central University College. Let's read some of your text messages. Esiedu Nicholas from University of Education, Winneba, says, speaking of broken English makes it difficult for the youth to publicly express themselves well during official functions. Alassan Salifu in Sola says, how long should applicants to colleges of education 2013-2014 wait for their interviews when the year is almost ended? For Nyikwama Udi at Tepa Lavanyo says, the fishermen at Tepa Botwase and his environs cannot get premix fuel because those in charge are smuggling the fuel, thereby making the demand very higher than supply. We need the government to intervene. Well, Fonipo, we cannot substantiate your allegation. We will find out. And Andrew Manga in Boku says, the housing project should be allocated to teachers as their reward on this. And again, we are sorry if we don't read your text, because we have lots and lots to read and we don't have enough time. So our listeners should bear with us. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Isaac Yawedu controlled the sounds, and my producers, Redmond Tete, Phyllis Kofi, Christopher Sidi, John Poby, and Celestine Avi, Doreen Ampofu read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely weekend.